Hi, everybody. My name's Cappy. I'm an addict.
Hey, Cappy.
They asked me to read the speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is a possibility that a group inexperienced in NA may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA's fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by defining ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. How's everybody doing this morning?
Great.
First, I want to thank God, my higher power, for everything. I want to take a moment, just a quick moment of silence, and ask you to invite your higher power into your heart and into your life, whoever your higher power is, you know, and ask them for grace and mercy and gratitude, you know, some help with some friends, loved ones who may be suffering. If you're suffering, ask them for help, because let me tell you something. I got a higher power in Narcotics Anonymous, and let me tell you something. Our higher power works. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. I want to thank the CPRCNA for asking me to speak, for taking a risk. They may never ask me back again, because I have strong feelings about Narcotics Anonymous. I'm pretty opinionated. I love this fellowship. How can you not love something that saved your life and continues to save your life? You know, I don't understand that. You know, I love this fellowship. I love the people. I don't necessarily like everybody or their behavior, but I try to love everybody unconditionally. You know, I love the 12 steps, I love the 12 traditions, the literature, the meetings, the conventions. Man, I love it all. Man, you know, I believe that I was an addict. I'm an addict's addict when I was using, and I'm an addict's recovering addict when I'm clean, you know, in this fellowship. Man, I dove into Narcotics Anonymous like a fish into water. You know, after I made my first meeting, which was October 10th, 1987, I was in Sing Sing, which is a prison about 30 miles north of New York City, maximum security prison. And I heard this beautiful man named Mark K. share his experience, strength, and hope. God rest his soul. He has since passed on from AIDS. And from that day forward, I knew that Narcotics Anonymous could be my way out of the vicious cycle of jails, institutions, and death. And it has been, by my choice. I'm here to tell you that it hasn't always been a smooth ride. And I'm here to tell you that this topic they gave me kind of threw me, Sleeping with the Enemy. Isn't that a movie? I think that's a movie, right? Sleeping with the Enemy? And I had to think about it. And I got this new job where I do courier work, one of the things I do. And so I drive around a lot, and I was thinking about this topic, sleeping with the enemy, you know. And the more I thought about it, because I like to try to keep it on the topic as much as possible. I mean, you can't do it 100%, but the more I thought about it, the more it made sense, you know. Because guess what, folks? Just because we're sitting up in this lovely NA convention, and most of us, all of us are looking nice and our skin is shining and we got pretty clothes on and nice jewelry, cell phones and pagers, guess what? The enemy's here. The disease is right here. And I know my disease is always with me. You know, my clean date is January 1st, 1988. You know, but it's still here. You know, it's here a lot less, you know, and it doesn't speak as loud as it used to, you know, and I really try not to give it credence. I really try not to listen to it, but I'm human. You know, just because I got some clean time under my belt doesn't mean that I'm not human. You know, and doesn't mean that I don't still make mistakes, and doesn't mean that I don't occasionally listen to the voice. I call it the voice. You know, that little voice in the back of the head, there's actually two voices. One is from here, from the heart, and the other one is from the head. And my enemy, my main enemy, can still be my thinking. You know, the disease is still right between my ears. It's not on my shoulders, not outside doing push-ups. And all that stuff we hear, all that slick stuff we hear in a lot of different meetings is right here. You know, but I've learned a lot of things as I've been through this journey of recovery. You know, I've learned a lot of things that that there's antidotes to the enemy. You know, some famous generals said that sometimes in warfare, because let me tell you something, we are absolutely in warfare. We are in personal, spiritual warfare. You know, once you put the drugs down, when I got clean in New York, from the Bronx, from New York, I live in Maryland now. The first 16 years of my recovery was in the Bronx and Manhattan. When I got clean in New York, they always used to say at every meeting, surrender, during the secretary's report, surrender. New York, they clap and you come up and you get your keychains. Surrender, the war is over, the war is over. And when you surrender and get a first step in our lives, the physical war is over, if you truly surrender. But see, the spiritual warfare just starts, you know. And the spiritual warfare is going to go on for the rest of our lives, one day at a time, you know. That's why I still come to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. I have made a commitment to myself to not use drugs. Not to say that I'm above using drugs, because if I don't work this program, I will use drugs. With 18 years and change clean, and 18 years and change clean, there's no doubt in my mind that if I do not work this program, I will eventually use drugs. But see, I know from my own experience and having some experience with this enemy, this disease, that I'll use a lot of shit. I'm going to try not to curse. I'm working on that. I'll use a lot of stuff before I get to the drugs. See, because my disease has manifested. I have a vicious disease. I spoke at a convention in Rhode Island years ago. I think it was 97 or 98, and they gave me the topic of relationships. And I was in so much pain that I talked about the greatest relationship of my life. And the greatest relationship of my life has been my relationship with my disease. You know, I want the greatest relationship of my life to be my relationship with God, my higher power. And some days it is. But the greatest, you know, I just turned 50 years old yesterday, you know, a lot of addicts where I come from don't make it to 50 years old. A lot of addicts, dope fiends, I'm a dope fiend. Coke shooter, dope shooter, pill head. I was BC before crack, you know. Because I got incarcerated in 81 and didn't come out to 89. So they were just, the crack thing was just starting around early 80s. A lot of people from my... where I come from, don't make it to be 50 years old. You know, so this relationship with my disease, including this relationship with my disease and recovery, has been the most exciting, intense relationship of my life. I mean, there has been tremendous highs with this relationship with my disease. So intoxicating and so inciting, and I'm not talking about drugs. You know, I'm talking about this other stuff. And so intense and so intoxicating and so powerful, you know. And then there's been incredible lows where with 10 years clean, I didn't know if I wanted to live anymore. You know, with 12 years clean, not knowing if I could continue to go on. You know, with substantial clean time, working this program to the best of my ability at that time, you know, not knowing if it was worth it. You know, having that question like, what am I here for? What does this shit mean? You know, the quality of my life obviously is better, you know, because I get up, shower, shave, eat pretty good and nice clothes, and I've always lived in a decent place in recovery, except when I first was in a halfway house, and that was still a decent place, clean sheets, food, you know, stuff like that. I know that physically I was better off, but mentally and spiritually and emotionally, and that's one thing we don't talk about in this program so much as emotional. I believe that it's a mental, spiritual, physical, and emotional disease too. I believe that one of the main reasons that I use is that I'm an addict, that I couldn't handle my feelings. And, you know, I've heard that 10,000 times here, so I'm not alone with that, you know. But this relationship with the enemy, this relationship with my disease, has been so powerful that clean in the rooms, there's been times that I was on a suicide mission. In the rooms. And I ain't talking about drugs. You know, I'm talking about all this other stuff. You know, that I allowed and that I justified, you know, our basic text says that we can justify and rationalize the most outrageous sense of nonsense. You know, and the stuff that I allowed, man, you know, that I participated in. You know, I used to say that I'm a sex addict, but I believe today, well, she's laughing, but I believe today that addiction is addiction, and that the sexual aspect was just another symptom of my disease. Because you're talking about a guy with 4 or 5 years in recovery, 6 years in recovery, you know, not the best looking guy in the world, but I'm surely not the worst, you know, take care of myself, always had a decent job, had some money in my pocket, know how to treat people, you know, have some manners and respect. That's the one thing that my parents tried to teach me that stuck, you know, on a mission, you know, dating 5 or 6, 7 women at the same time, you know, dating 5 or 6, 7, we said dating, but you know what it really was, right? You know, boom, 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 you know, and if they weren't boom, 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 it was like, okay, you know, dating 4, 5, 6, 7 women at the same time, and then acting out with prostitutes, you know, and then sometimes on the weekends in New York, going to the sex clubs. Because in New York, they got sex clubs. You know? I mean, it wasn't about I couldn't get laid. I'm messing around with 4, 5, 6 women. You know, and I don't consider myself a player, Don Juan, or none of that shit. You know, I'm just a sick guy, man. You know, and in New York, there's a lot of sick women. You know? And they were willing to participate. You know? You know, so how much is enough? How much sex can you have? How much is enough? You know, the enemy told me that I needed more. The disease would tell me, you need more. 3 women in one day is not enough. How sick is that? You know, go from a meeting, go to the hostel, which, let me tell you something, I never messed with prostitutes in active addiction. One time in my whole active addiction did I ever mess around with a prostitute. You know, the basic text says some of us will do things in recovery that we never did in active addiction. And the process, messing with the girls of the street, God rest their souls, I got nothing against them because they're just people like us waiting to get here. Most of them. You know what I'm saying? But doing something that I never really did in active addiction. Leaving a meeting, going to the whole stroll, getting my thing off, and then going to one of these women's bed. You know, leaving a woman's bed at 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, say, honey, I gotta go home and get showered, get dressed for work, I got an early meeting, whatever the case may be. On the way home at 2:30 in the morning, stop by the hostel, get my thing off, go to work, and then go to another woman's house. The enemy told me it was okay. You ain't using drugs. You ain't stealing. You ain't sticking nobody up. Most of the time you're using protection. Most of the time, yeah, right. You know, they're volunteers, you know. Tell them that you don't want a relationship, you know, that you just want to have some fun, enjoy, you know, enjoy each other's company. Yeah, right. You know, and I was caught up in that, you know, for years, you know, and I was still making meetings, and I was still trying to work the steps to the best of my ability, and I was still doing service commitments, and I was still sponsoring people, and I was still calling my sponsor, and I was still showing up, and I, you know, thank God, if I wouldn't have did all that shit, I would have used drugs a long, 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 long time ago. You know, and I felt so terrible about myself for doing stuff like that. I mean, like I said, it was intoxic. Being in these sex clubs in New York, it's like, oh, it's crazy, man. If you had the sex thing, you know. But guess what? I found that even in that aspect of my disease, guess what? I wasn't alone. Because guess who I used to see in the whorehouses? Y'all. Guess who I used to see riding around in their pretty cars in the host rolls at 2, 3 in the morning? Y'all. You know? Guess who I used to see in the sex clubs? Y'all. What are you doing here? Well, 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 I didn't come here to pray. I came here to get my shit off. You know? Thank God I ain't living like that today. Thank God. You know, and there's many other aspects of the enemy. You know, the shopping thing. You know, I went bankrupt in recovery. I used to walk around with 13 credit cards, 4 or 5 grand in my pocket at all times. Like, you know, you need that much money to walk around in. You know what I'm saying? Before I moved from the Bronx to Maryland, I had 2 walk-in closets full of fucking clothes that I probably wore 10% of them. You know, I got Italian suits that still have the tags on them from 4 or 5 years ago from sales at Barney's and Macy's and shit in New York. You know what I'm saying? Like, how much is enough? How many women are enough? How many suits are enough? How much gold is enough? You know, how much money in the bank is enough? You know, how many gold chains are enough? I know addicts got 96 pairs of sneakers, you know, and they're like $100 a pop, 10 grand worth of sneakers. How much is enough? How many do you wear? You know? How many cars is enough? Homes, you know? And I had to come to grips with that stuff. You know, how much is enough, man? Is one woman enough? My sponsor said it was. People who are working a good program said it was. And today that I believe that it is. You know, I got married. That's incredible. You know? An addict like me, married, man. You know? Incredible, man. You know, this enemy, this disease, the enemy, is the most powerful thing we will ever experience except for God. And there is an antidote, and there is defenses to this enemy, and that's God. You're the higher power of your choice. I'm not a religious guy, but I'm truly trying to live a spiritual lifestyle today. Am I perfect? Absolutely not. Do I fall short? All the time. But see, I learned in Narcotics Anonymous, the only thing is required is that you try. And I mean honestly try. And we know when we're trying. Ain't nobody got to tell. Your sponsor ain't got to tell you you're bullshitting. You're going through the motions. You're faking the funk. We know that shit. Come on. We got good guts. We got good right here. That shit kept us alive out there on fucking Jerome Avenue. You know what I'm saying? You know, that shit kept us alive. So we know when we're faking the funk. We know when we're bullshitting. And I learned that the program only requires is that I try. And see, I wasn't trying hard enough when I was going through all that stuff. You know, I had 10 years clean, man. And I had stopped trying to do this stuff several times. And I was in a couple monogamous relationships during this time. And when I was in these relationships, I didn't act out. But what I would do is I would sabotage the relationship so I could go act out. Intentionally sabotage the relationships, you know. And when I had about 10 years clean, man, I was in this relationship with this really incredibly sexy woman. And it was all about the sex. And we broke up. I mean, it wasn't even like a real long thing. It was just like a couple month thing. And I started crying. And I cried every day for about 4.5 months. Couldn't stop. I had a pretty good job. I was a senior clinician, this big drug program in New York. I was a senior man on the clinical team. And I resigned from my job, and they were like flabbergasted because they really liked me. You know, we clean up well. We do well when we get jobs and when we learn how to be responsible. You know, when I resigned from my job, and that was a time like I didn't want to die, but I just could not stand the pain anymore, man. You know, and I was going to therapy, I was seeking outside help 2 or 3 times a week. You know, and this is my experience, strength and hope. This is my story. You know, and this enemy, this disease had me, man. You know, I would cry like a fucking baby and cry and cry and cry. And I was ashamed to make meetings in my area. You know, 10 years clean. Mr. N.A., they used to call me Mr. N.A., you know, because, you know, I'm fanatical about just about anything I do. You know, and I would go to meetings in different areas. People would say, Cappy, you're a good guy. You helped a lot of guys. You sponsored a lot of men over the years. You're good. And I would cry. I went to my doctor's office, and they had like a little office party, and a guy offered me a plate of food because they had extra food, and I cried. And I couldn't come out of it. And let me tell you something. I did everything. I was praying, and I was going to meetings, and I was sharing. And I couldn't come out of this thing, man. You know, I was in therapy, and I was going to, like, acupuncture and psychodrama and self-hypnosis therapy. And I finally had to go on medication. You know, I just couldn't come out of this thing. From what they said, I had such a chemical imbalance that no matter what I did for 4.5 months, you know, and I resisted that for, I don't have much time, it's a whole nother, I resisted that for months. For 4.5 months I suffered because I wouldn't go on medication, you know, because of my predisposed thinking, you know, about medication and Narcotics Anonymous, and I've learned differently. You know, if I have to take medication to feel normal, then it's okay, you know. As long as I take it as prescribed by a doctor and I don't abuse it. You can't abuse fucking Prozac anyways. You know? That shit ain't getting you high, you know. So I'm recovering from the disease today. I'm recovering from this enemy that we sleep with. You know, and the enemy is right here. I sleep with my wife every night. She's a beautiful, loving, caring woman. And she's not the enemy. You know what I'm saying? Is my thinking is the enemy. You know, and if I place myself in negative situations, it's the enemy. You know, I believe that the 12 steps and the 12 traditions are most powerful tool on this planet for recovery from the disease of addiction. I was in the field of addiction treatment for almost 15 years. I've done all kinds of different treatment and all kinds of different therapy. And my experience is that the people who stay clean and who are successful in the recovery process from the disease of addiction, I don't know about anything else, are the people who stick and stay and work the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and I'm going to tell you something spiritual. This program is truly a God-given program. And this, I'm a history buff. My favorite subject when I was a kid in school was history. You know, I watched the History Channel and I love history. Narcotics Anonymous, as we know it today, was started in California, Studio City. They had one meeting for 6 years. Okay, from 1953, they had one official meeting. And if you read the story and the basic text, I found the only NA meeting in the world by Bob B., who's in my sponsorship family. That's his story. He'll tell you. From 53 to 59, there was one Narcotics Anonymous meeting. Again, NA as we know it today. And it almost died out. They stopped the meeting, then they would start it, then they would stop it, and they'd start it, and then they'd stop it, and they'd start it. We're now 53 years old. Our anniversary is July. In July of 1953, we were 50 years, from one meeting in Studio City, California. The last figures I heard at the World Convention in Hawaii was we have well over 30,000 meetings worldwide. We are in like 120 different countries. I'm talking fucking Russia. I'm talking China. I'm talking Japan. Our literature has been translated into well over 100 languages. You know what I'm saying? I've met people where I've been fortunate enough to go to like 7 world conventions, and I've met people from Russia and Japan and England and Scotland and South America, Colombia. Imagine being an NA in Colombia, right? And you could buy pure cocaine for a dollar a fucking gram, right? And they're staying clean. They got 30,000 recovering addicts in fucking Iran. In Iran. They have 30,000 recovering addicts in Iran. We have 1 million members. Like I say, 30,000 meetings. our literature is worldwide. If you got something more spiritual than that, let me know. I'm serious. After this meeting, if you have something more spiritual, not religious, but spiritual than that, let me know. And guess what? In the history of the world, 53 years, we're like real young. Narcotics Anonymous is just starting, man. So stick with Narcotics Anonymous. If you're new, stick with Narcotics Anonymous. If it can work for an addict like me, it can work for anybody. You know what I'm saying? Give yourself a break. If you're suffering, if you're an old timer or a new timer or a some timer, you know what I'm saying, or a middle timer, give yourself a break. Just hang on for today, because I'm here to tell you that hope is alive and hope can get better. You know, your life can become better. My man is living proof. She's living proof. We're all living proof of this program. Look at this convention. It's incredible. I've probably been to 60 or 70 conventions, and it never ceases to amaze me when 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10,000 people get together, and no matter where we're from or what we've done, we've all got the same common purpose. You know? Narcotics Anonymous. Narcotics Anonymous, our language is the language of love, the language of the heart. Let's love each other more, man. And stop slinging shit so much, man. You know, anyways, I love Narcotics Anonymous. I love you people. I'm going to let my man speak. I know he's got a good message. Give yourself a break. The spiritual, the physical war is over if you surrendered, but the spiritual war is just beginning. And if you don't do daily stuff to address the enemy will be on your ass. God bless you and God bless NA.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing, Kathy. Whew, that was a powerful message. Now, with no further ado, I'd like to introduce our second speaker, and that will be Vincent.
Thank God. I'm an addict named Vincent. It's only because of God's grace, His mercy, and you people, I just want to say thank you. I've been told to read this statement, the speaker's statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there's not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand the NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. Let's also, man, show Capri some love for a strong message from NA. I'm an addict named Vincent. My clean date is August 10th, 1989. And since I've been here, I hadn't found it necessary to use. Thought about it, but didn't do it. Even when I thought or felt like I wanted to. I don't know about anybody else, but I'm just so happy that I ain't take a hit today. You know, the topic is sleeping with the enemy, and like a priest stated, I may go off a little bit because after I thought about it for about 30 seconds, my mind went somewhere else. It's not my fault. But for the newcomer, Let me simply say that staying clean must come first. Matter of fact, if I can simplify it, the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Let me say it again. I said the main thing is to keep the main thing the main thing. Staying clean must come first. I don't know about anybody in here, but I've never experienced anything. Anything is awful, ugly, mean, or nasty as a disease of addiction. It's just some of my experience, but I think, you know, my disease is so deep, right? And like, when she said we had to read this, I had to remind myself, because I ain't going to read it. Plus, you already read it. Why does he say, man, look at this. You know what I'm saying? They're going to try to make you read some shit that somebody read. You know what I mean? You need to get to you, right? But then I was looking at this little movie cartoon with my buddy the other day, and the little boy said to his brother, why don't you ever just do what you're told? I had to come in here and learn how to do what I'm told. So if you're new in here, if you do what you're told, because see, in our basic text, it's the blue book. There's two books, book one and book two. Book two is some personal stories that you may or may not be able to identify with. But book one is the program. Those of us who do exactly as the basic text states, we don't use again. Relapse has not been a requirement for me to stay here because I tried to follow that book. I was beat down so bad that when I showed up, I said to you all, look, I can't stop using. Help me. And you guys simply said, okay, are you sure? I said, look, help me. I said, what do you do? You all kindly said very humbly but very clearly, all right, shut up, sit down, and this is what we do. So whenever we tell you something, shut up, sit down, and do it. And I need to remember that because my disease is so deep. They're talking about your topic is sleeping with the enemy. My thing is like, damn, sleep is just like one third of our life. So my mind went to living with the enemy. And I must be clear. And the reason why I say that is because when I arrived, there were people here who obviously had time, who was telling me what not to do. But yet, some of them elected to use again. Now, at the end of my road, it was hell. So the question is, why in the hell do I want to go back to hell? And so I recognized that when I came in here that my life was so yucky, it was so ugly, that using obviously appeared like a step up. So in here, I don't want to be in here participating in a membership that I'm not practicing the principles, because the literature says that my program is going to be conditioned on my spiritual conditioning. And so I don't want to come in here with a conditional spirit so low that using sounds like a good idea. I don't know about you, but I don't ever want to go back to doing some of the things my disease would make me do. It's very, very strange. It would make me like... It would make me touch people I don't know. Like, you see that white thing right there? I'd be like, I would almost put my foot on it between my heel and my soul. I don't want to crush it. I wish somebody knew what I was talking about. I don't ever! Oh, man, I was such a soldier. I got some of my partners from the day here, and we just stand around the old heads. Just sent us on our mission. We wouldn't tell. We wouldn't snitch. We knew what not to say. We were experienced in how to stay out of the joint. That was before crack showed up, but... But I've never followed instructions as well till my disease took charge. My disease showed me how to fit the same peephole for hours, man. I mean, like, I've been looking so long, my neck started hurting, talking about like switch legs without moving the eye and shit. I wish somebody knew what I was talking about. I'm talking about a disease, man. You know, but see, I came here today. When I came up here, I sat down, I looked at this chair, and I said, no, I'm going to sit over that one. I want God to be here. You know, I said, see, I need it. I got the disease of addiction because, like my man said, it's my mind. See, my mind is the barrier of the quality of life that I long to live. See, I know that I was designed in such a way. I have a dream inside of me that once I get in my lane, I know there'll be a life not only to live, but a life to love living. I don't ever want to learn how to be marginally miserable in this thing called life. See, my disease wants to trick me. It wants to remind me that I'm not as bad as I used to be, yet I find myself that, yeah, okay, you can tolerate a relationship even though it's expired, but you're still in it. You know what I mean? Like, you know what I mean? You got a job, like you ain't got to go back to school, man, because you're paying your bills, but you're unhappy because all you can do is pay on your bills. You know, you're in a position where even though you love God, you love you, but every time you turn around, you have a spiritual relapse. Because now you're walking around holding on to stuff in your past. See, the brain, see, this barrier here is my brain is so deep. See, I live with this thing. That's why I have to continually allow you all to help me with me, because I am tired of offending me. So you said that the biggest problem I'm ever going to have is me. And so I recognize I have to learn how to leave me alone. It's my thinking that creates my daily chaos. I'm the creator of my own nightmare, and I say, why do I keep doing this to me? What is it? I got my bills paid, but yet I ain't feeling. I got freedom from, yeah. The book of Narcotics Anonymous says it's perfect because it has showed me not to use, so I can get freedom from, but do I have enough spiritual development to have freedom for something else? See, I don't want to be from something. I got to be for something. It's about me being happy today. And the literature says, I'm the only one responsible for my happiness. Well, if I'm so intelligent and I came in here and went back to school and got a couple degrees, why don't I have enough sense to make my own self happy? There's something about, see, I love our program because it says, live in today. But see, this disease, this mind I have, family, all my pain shows up coming from my past or I go into the future. Worry, concern. I wish my head knew what I was talking about. It is so difficult because, see, I allow people who I think I love and they think they love me, you know, could be employer, could be son, but always going to tell me something that I want to believe more than that. As opposed to believing more than God in here. See, there's nothing wrong with me. Other than I find myself with a lack of courage to stand up and get myself some help. I had to learn how to give myself a break. But this disease is so deep, it reminds me of, it's like a fish, my illness. Fish in the ocean, it's born in the ocean. It swims in the ocean. It marries in the ocean. Maybe it hangs out in the ocean. It parties in the ocean. The fish dies in the ocean, but does not know it's in the ocean. He's unaware that there's even water all around him because shit has always been that way. See, it's only until when my disease is, I had no idea. I was born in the disease. I live in this disease. I walk all the stuff I did and didn't do and said and didn't say is a result of my illness, but I didn't know I was ill. Matter of fact, everybody knew I was ill but me. I don't know if y'all know what I'm talking about, but what I'm saying is that only until I was blessed by God through somebody who was trying to change their life said, look, the only way you can see what you're caught up in is take a break, separate yourself from it just a little bit. That's why I keep coming back to Narcotics Anonymous, because in here, I'm separated from my disease because my mind is a horrible thing by itself. Because I'm always going out of the day, my mind is like a film, like a movie. It never stops, man. It's always going on. It's fantasizing, it's dreaming. And my mind starts looking back, and I talk about my history. What could have, should have been, what I should have did, would have done it, would have turned out. Maybe if I get with her or get with him, it'd be better for me. My mind is a terrible thing. If I could only stay in the day, because today, woo, today is good. Listen, God says, if you just stay in the day, just see, just be, now enjoy. If I can just stay there, but I can't. It's always some fear-based feeling that takes me someplace that I'm unprepared to go because I can't control no outcomes. I can't change nothing that I did, but yet I allow somebody out there to tell me that I'm obligated to some bullshit I have no control over. Help me, somebody. Somebody help me because I'm sick. Because I want to justify and rationalize why I can't do me today. You say, I'm your what? Your father. What that got to do with anything? I was trying to know what I was talking about. I'm talking about family living with the disease of addiction, with all the gifts, and almost 17 years on this journey with us, I still cannot afford the luxury of believing everything that I think. See, I got to come in here. I got to go on a meeting all the time. Life is a matter of perspective. The difference between a good day and a bad day in most cases is how I choose to look at it. It's mindful of the man who landed in his bed in the hospital and coming out of a coma. He just had a terrible experience and he opens up his eyes and the first person he sees is his wife and he said, oh, Louise, God bless you. I see you again. Louise, oh, baby, it's okay. He said, Louise, you remember when we got married and I wanted to carry you over the threshold and fell, broke my leg. Well, baby, you were there. And then later on, I was trying to buy all those things you wanted and took those two jobs and plus another part-time job and had those two heart attacks and I come out bypassing. You were there. Oh, Louise, now here it is. I lost all this little money and come to find out that you mismanaged our savings account just a little bit. You did much better than I would have it now. I know that. And it was such a shock. I went into a coma. And when I came out, you were there. He said, Louise, you know, ever since we've been together, you ain't been nothing but bad luck. What I'm saying is sometimes I gotta be mindful of how I view things because I'm emotionally disturbed and the most I can ever see with everything being perfect is just half of a situation. So I recognize I need you all to tell me not only what I think, but how do I feel about what I'm thinking because I keep making these choices, you all, that at the end of the day, I got that other symptom of my illness called that again disease. Damn, I done did that shit again. I done lost that job again. I done found me another half partner same with that last motherfucker with me again. I wish somebody had known what I was talking about. I'm talking about a disease that I live with. And it said that it is incurable. I will never, ever, ever be cured of this emotional disturbance. So I need something to help me practice staying on point. And I'm not equipped. I got these feelings, y'all, sometime, man, that the definition of my feeling and my perception of how I'm supposed to respond to it are out of line on most days because I use things from the past and from the present, the future, to help me understand where I'm right now, and sometimes I just can't do it because of fear. I'm tired of making decisions based on fear. They say that faith and doubt is at the opposite of the equation. I'm saying I don't know about that. I say that in my faith is always doubt, but it's no more than an element. I need to take that faith and move on, because at the end of the day, and I want to say this and take my seat, a couple of things I've experienced as I've been in here, because courage is the essential ingredient for me to stay away from my own hell. One, once I went through something, things were never as bad as I thought they were once I got to the other side. Never. My disease say, man, don't go. Call in slick. I mean, you did it. You might as well confess. I said, damn, I wasn't even there. But my disease would go ahead and tell me that. Don't tell them the truth. I can only stop lying. If, look at here. My significant other, we used to pray together all the time. And we would pray. My wife, she would rub my hand. We'd be praying. That shit was so irritating. She would rub my hand and she'd be on fire. She'd be praying a long time. I'd be like, hurry up. You know, I'm talking about, listen to me. Help me. I said, a couple of years, she's rubbing my hand. I just couldn't take it just one at a time. I just yelled out, stop it. She said, what? Scared the mess out of her. She said, what? I said, we'll be praying. You'll be rubbing my hand. I said, I find it irritating. I can't focus on God. As a matter of fact, I'm up here hating you for, like, making me be so irritable. Hold it. Help it. Here's the idiot. I said, she said, look. Why didn't you say something? Help me. I mean, how often I ain't tell the truth. I don't have the courage to say, I don't like that. This is what I would rather do. Can we do it this way? Come on, God. I got to get away from being fear. I got to stop making decisions. Always worrying about how you and I are going to think about something before reality even shows up. I need to stay in the day. It was bothering me right now. I better tell somebody. You must be talking to somebody. They're going to pull you up on something. And they're going to say, yeah, that's the same thing you did back then in October. Wait a minute, old time. You've been holding on to some shit by October. What kind of shit is that? You understand what I'm saying? They want to read you all of a sudden. I don't know if I'm making any sense, family. But this disease is so awesome. The other part that I really learned to understand about going through and getting to the other side is that I never felt as bad as I thought I would once it was over. Man, tell them, my brother, tell them the truth. I cannot grow and evolve to the level of living a life that I love if I don't spend enough time staying in reality. History and the future is unreal. It's imaginary and sometimes pure fantasy at best. And I have to stop allowing new people who love me so much, who care about me so much, keep putting those bullshit expectations on me. I'm not here for you. You didn't call me what you want. I know my purpose is to be on the 12th step, to be serving God, helping somebody, and seek some pleasure. So now if I'm not sure I'm helping you, I want to feel good. And that shit you saying and doing ain't making me feel like I want to feel. So I need to step off. You ain't got to go nowhere. I am responsible for my happiness. And ain't the person sitting across from me. It ain't my boss. It ain't my kids. I got to take a look at me. Am I being me? My grandma used to say, just go be. Listen to me. You know how many times in my life I tried to be you just to have some peace? I tried to curse either man, but fuck you. And I ain't mad. Today, as a result of these steps, because the steps, family, help me to get to me. That's all I'm trying to say. If you're in here, participate. Understanding our program is not enough. It's only through application that it'll work. My name is Vincent. I'm an addict. Thanks for letting me share.